waters, Damian Lillard. It's Adult Swim, folks. Get out the pool.
What's up, guys? Welcome to Birdwatch. I'm Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for NOLA.com and The Advocate. Here pretty late on a Thursday night, the NBA draft lottery wrapped up about 2 hours ago, and I've got the Trailblazers-Lakers game on in the background. Jeff, it's not very competitive. My dream of the Trailblazers sweeping the Lakers in the first round, Charles Barkley's dream too. I don't think it's going to happen.
Do you think he's going to put the broom away?
I think he's going to have to, yeah. That was pretty good, though. I saw Bomani Jones tweet that Chuck looks like a man who hasn't used a broom or swept in 40 years.
And it was like, it looked like the broom that my grandmother kept in her kitchen when I was a child. It's like, where did he even get his hands on a broom like that at the TNT studio? He must have brought it from home. He probably stopped at the dollar store on the way there just for that gag, but... I thought it was good. Of all the Charles Barkley bits, I enjoyed that one the most, probably.
Yeah. That must have been just like chilling in the TNT storeroom. You know, it's been there since like 1987, you know, when Ernie Johnson still had a full head of hair, had the salad going. I think that's probably where it was. You know, this Lakers Trailblazers game was probably Damian Lillard's worst game since the NBA restart. He apparently dislocated a finger on his left hand. That's generally something that people are able to play through. I think Dirk Nowitzki memorably dealt with that in the 2011 finals. I mean, Dame's, of course, a righty, so he should be able to play through it, but, you know, not good if you are like me and were rooting for chaos and a Trailblazers first-round upset.
Yeah, it looked like it hurt. I think that's always, whenever you have an injury like that, it's less about whether you can play through it and more about your pain tolerance, because, you know, and whether you can still shoot successfully. You know, one of the things that, you know, Dirk was able to play through a finger injury, but he was never he was a shooter, but he wasn't a Dame Lillard type just sharp shooter where he's pulling up from 40 feet. And I'm watching a replay of it literally right now. They're blowing it up on the TV to my left. And it looks like he caught his finger on Anthony Davis's heel. So even 2 years after that playoff loss, Anthony Davis is still haunting Damian Lillard.
Jeff, after game one, we're tweeting back and forth about just Dame in his range and his ability to hit these shots from 35 feet. He's just incredibly accurate from deep, deep range. And, you know, the more I've kind of read about that, I think it's really interesting that, you know, him having that skill in particular and using it in a game really goes back to the Trailblazers getting swept against the Pelicans in 2018. Kirk Goldsberry with ESPN has a really good article on how Dame became so proficient at the deep, deep ball. And you can kind of trace it back to the Pelicans just trapping the hell out of him in 2018. You know, I think it's so interesting. We've talked a little since the season ended about, you know, great players are kind of defined by how they deal with adversity. I mean, Dame's response to getting swept in 2018, an embarrassment really, is exactly what you want in your face of the franchise. I mean, not only did he add stuff on the court, you know, like the crazy deep ball. I mean, it is incredible watching a guy be able to shoot, you know, from 35 feet like that. I mean, he has just been a joy to watch during the restart, but also, you know, from a leadership standpoint, him just holding the team together, you know, helping get them to a Western Conference Finals appearance last year, what he's been able to do this year. I mean, I think Dame is really, you know, tonight kind of put a damper on it, and, you know, the finger might change things, but I think he's really been the story of the restart. And I just don't think you could say enough good things about his leadership ability. Like, it's just so refreshing in this era of switching teams and social media passive aggressiveness to have Dame Lillard, you know, just say like, man, we're together and we can do this here in Portland. Like, I don't want to go anywhere else. I mean, I don't fault guys for changing teams, but like, I just think what Dame has been able to do is refreshing and awesome. And we just need guys like that.
Yeah. He's not going to subtweet you. He's going to drain one in your face and then talk to you about it in person. No, and it really is remarkable. You know, I saw a tweet, I want to say it was after the 60-point game during the seeding games, and it was basically like, I think in 10 years we're going to look back and wish we had appreciated Dame more than we do right now. And I think he gets a ton of attention, but I just don't think that he gets the level of attention for the insane level of talent that he puts out. And it's even more, you know, I'm trying to think of a good comparison, but just like, he gets that look in his eye and it's like, you know, the next shot is going in. It doesn't matter where it's from. It doesn't matter who's guarding him. It's going in. It's just a matter of who gets embarrassed on the other end of it. And you know, there's probably maybe five shooters in the NBA that can do what he does. Not as well as he does, but literally even like come close to doing it. You know, you have Steph Curry, who, you know, I think it's easy to forget that Steph Curry basically invented that shot that Dame is now knocking down. You know, he's
right. When I think of that deep three, I think of that game against Oklahoma City. You know, when Kevin Durant was still with OKC and Steph basically won the game.
It was overtime, wasn't it? I want to say the best part is that he's dribbling up the floor and the announcers, I think it was Mike Breen, is like, they still have a timeout left. And they're like, oh, no. He doesn't need a timeout. He's going to pull up from 40. I think he got a double bang on that one. But and he's just a remarkable player. And that's what makes the fact that the Pelicans were able to sweep them in that series and that Jrue Holiday is able to shut him down when he does, that like, it's easy to lose track of the fact like no one else does that and other than maybe tonight. But and I think that goes into the fact, like you said, you know, maybe this slows him down, maybe the finger will hurt him. He seems like the type of dude that will actually get better because he's pissed off that his finger hurts, you know, that he's that type of player. And I don't think that the Blazers are going to win this series. I thought this and the Bucks series were incredible overreactions. It happens. You know, the Magic beat the Raptors last year in game one, and then the Raptors went on to win it all. And I think the Bucks are going to do the same thing. I think the Magic just anoint the next champion every year. But I don't think they're going to win, but I don't think we're done hearing from Dame this series at all.
Yeah, I guess why, you know, the overreaction after the game ones this year felt, you know, a little more real. And don't get me wrong, like, I think a lot of it was just people having fun on Twitter as they do and just losing their minds. But, you know, of course, there's no home court advantage or anything. So people feel like, oh, you know, no home court, like anything is possible. And, you know, I think there will be more variability in this year's playoffs than in a normal year. But I still think the Bucks and Lakers are definitely winning their first round series. But I don't think there's that much variability. I just want to make one more point about the deep threes thing we talked about, too. I just think when you have that shot in your arsenal, it just opens up so much of your game, too. Like, I look at a Luka Doncic, and if you're just looking at, like, the percentages, like, Luka Doncic, you know, if you're just going like the basketball reference percentage or whatever, looks like, you know, a fine three-point shooter. He might, you know, he looks average. I mean, he takes a lot of them, but percentage-wise, he just makes, you know, a fair amount. But I think, you know, part of what makes Luka Doncic so incredible is that he can hit those deep, deep threes that are step-backs, and guys feel like they got to hang all over him. And because of that, it opens up driving lanes. Like, I don't feel like Luka is that quick. I mean, his deceleration is pretty incredible, but I feel like you know, a lot of the reason, like, Dame and Luka, it seems like they can get to the basket whenever they want is because guys are, like, having to hang on them from so far away from the basket.
Right. Well, you saw Harden, I can't remember who it was, they started trapping him at half court. Like, literally the second he came over half court, they were trapping him. And it's like, that works, except James Harden is also probably a top five passer. And all of a sudden, that's just like, it's like taking a can opener to a defense. Because how do you extend that much? You talk about spacing. If you have to guard someone the second they get to the logo, the spacing on offense is going to be off the charts. And it's just a matter of whether the guys around you can make your shots. And when the other, when Gary Trent Jr. is hitting five threes, you're going to have a hard time beating the Blazers because Dame's going to get his. And you can't slow him down without leaving a guy like Gary Trent open or a guy like Carmelo open. But I think the part about home court advantage is interesting. And I actually think that it's not. So the Lakers losing in game one, I don't think home court advantage is the factor there because, you know, the Lakers are going to come back and they're going to win this game in six games or win the series in six games, maybe five games. It's the lower seed that actually gets hurt with the losing a home court advantage in the first round because look at the Sixers and the Celtics. In a normal universe, you know, there's the saying, the series doesn't start until someone wins a road game. Well, the Celtics won their two home games, and in a normal situation, the Sixers would get to go home and get their home crowd going bananas and have a much better chance in game three. That doesn't happen now. The Sixers have to play the same Celtics team in the same goddamn bubble with the same, you know, with a few different virtual fans and the banners. You know, that hurts them. And I think, like, normally I'd say, okay, as you know, you're watching the Celtics and you shouldn't overreact to being up 2-0. I think you can overreact because I don't think, like, Jason Tatum is a show. Jaylen Brown has been a stud. Jason Tatum's hit a 35-footer the other day too. I think it's going to be the new, the new Coke. But it's, I think that's going to be a much bigger factor in the first round. Whereas in the second round, the home court in the game seven, if you're the Lakers, and I guess Lakers and Clippers is a bad example because they play on the home court anyway. If you're in the second round, if you're the Bucks and the Raptors, or I don't know if that would be the matchup, either way, like that's a game seven where the Bucks don't get home court advantage. That's where you start to worry about after this round.
I have one more observation from Lakers Trailblazers before we move on to lottery stuff. Did you happen to notice who was a virtual fan for the Lakers in this game Thursday night?
Was it Ric Flair?
I don't know if it was Ric Flair. I mean, he might have been, but Lil Wayne. I saw Lil Wayne in the crowd for the Lakers tonight. And my thought on that is Lil Wayne was in the TNT Photoshop for the Pelicans Gone Fishing. I mean, Lil Wayne is a Lakers fan. Like, he's been a Lakers fan for a long time. He had the whole song about Kobe, which was cool. I mean, I like that. But, like, he's done a lot of first take appearances over the years, and he's always, like, stand for the Lakers. Like, he was in the crowd for the Lakers tonight. I just ask you, TNT Photoshoppers, producers, when you create the Pelicans Gone Fishing meme in years to come, leave Lil Wayne out of it, all right? He's apparently moved on.
He does not represent that.
Yeah, if community. You're going to include a fan, in that Photoshop, like, please at least make that fan representative of this fan base,
Just make it Cam Jordan. Make it, keep it simple.
Yeah. Cam Jordan, Angie Thomas, Wynn Butler, Morris Bart. Yeah, I see probably enough of Morris Bart's mug around town.
Yeah. I used to. I don't go anywhere anymore, so I don't get it quite as much. But I know there's like four super fans, and he's one of them in my mind.
The Womack might be pretty funny, man. I'll never be able to see that face and not think of put the Womack on him.
Putting the Womack on him?
Yeah, just... I wish some reporter would just do like a 10,000 word story on the personal injury lawyers in New Orleans, but we can save that subject for another time. We don't need to go down
that. We're not going to talk. We're not going to do that on this podcast.
car insurance is pretty high here, Jeff. That was that was a pretty rude surprise when I switched over from Colorado. Geez.
Yeah, yeah. I moved a block down the road from. I lived, it's technically uptown, but I think it was in Lil Wayne's hood. It was Holly Grove. I was like two blocks away from Apple and Eagle, but I moved up the street to Mid City and my car insurance like doubled because Mid City's flood prone. And I realized later I should have just not updated my address because why would I? but I don't have a car anymore, so we're good.
You don't love to see it. Okay, let's talk about some lottery stuff.
Did the Pelicans get number one? I can't remember.
So, no, they did not strike gold for the second year in a row. I don't even think that's an apt metaphor because, last year was striking gold. Like, everyone and their cousin and their dog and their sister and their relatives who lives overseas knew that Zion Williamson was the best player in the 2019 draft. I feel like if you ask 10 different people who is the best player or the best prospect in this draft, you probably get five or six different answers. I mean, the names I most consistently see towards the top, LaMelo Ball, the younger brother of Lonzo Ball, obviously, Anthony Edwards. I see James Wiseman in there sometimes. There are just a couple names, and the top of this draft is just not great. Like, I mean, of course, if you're the Pelicans, like, yeah, you want to leap into the top four. You take that every time. You know, at the very least, that could be used as a trade chip for you. But, you know, I kind of get the sense, or at least, you know, if I was David Griffin or Trajan Langdon, I would not be that disappointed that, you know, I didn't hit it in my 6% odds of leaping into the top four. Like, I'd be perfectly content at 13 this year because, you know, I think there could be a lot of, like, solid role players in this draft, but, like, it doesn't seem like this draft has star potential at the top in the ways that a lot of other previous drafts did.
Yeah, and so the broadcast had me rolling a little bit because it seemed like they didn't think ahead to the fact that there's going to be a slight delay when they cut to the team representatives. And like Trajan Langdon's a good example. Like they get 13 and he's like, his facial expression literally doesn't change. It's just like pure RBF the entire way through. And it's like, oh, good, cool. Glad we saw Trajan on that. Maybe give him like 3 seconds to say, like, give you a thumbs up.
Well, to be fair, I don't think Trajan's expression would have changed even if the Pelicans had landed the number one pick. Like, he's just kind of a stoic guy, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we can't. It seems like a lifetime ago that Alvin Gentry was bruising people's hands in the green room after they got number one. That was literally last year's draft lottery. But it's like, it seems just like a different world. But this draft is funny because it's fitting that LaMelo Ball is in this draft, because if I had to compare it to a recent draft, I would compare it to Lonzo's draft, where, you know, the 76ers were so confident that Markel Fultz was the best player in that draft, they traded up, and the Celtics traded back to 3 and picked Jason Tatum after Lonzo Ball, who I don't think it's really a debate as to who the best player of that group is right now. I mean, Markel Fultz is actually playing basketball at a reasonably high level now, so that's good to see. You're happy. You got to be happy for him after the crap he had to go through. And Lonzo has been up and down. He's a good player, but he's definitely been up and down. So, I mean, and this is the same situation where, you know, if Anthony Edwards goes number one, it's like, yeah, he might be the best player in the draft, but it could also be Obi Toppin going at 5 or James Wiseman going at 7. You know, this mock I'm looking at right now has him going at 7, but it also hasn't been updated, so it has the Bulls taking him at 7. The Bulls are actually picking at 4. But, you know, I think that we were talking about this before we came on, and I think for the Pelicans, picking at 13, it's a little bit of no man's land in terms of you don't know who's going to fall there. There's a lot of variability in terms of how the draft goes. And I think that they need to look across the hall and take, you know, a page out of the Saints draft strategy, which is the Saints never worry about who's going to fall to them. They identify their guy and they go and get him. A few years ago, they wanted Marcus Davenport, a guy out of UTSA that nobody knew about, and they traded, you know, 2 first-round picks to go and get him. This year, they traded half their draft class to go up and get a guy in the 3rd round that no one had ever heard of out of Dayton. And I think that type of strategy is the same type of strategy I want to see the Pelicans hone in on this year, because, you know, I can't say who the best player in this draft is going to be, but they need to identify the guy they think is the best player in this draft, and wherever he is, wherever they think they need to go to get him, they need to get there. They have the assets, and it's just a matter of being aggressive. And I think that, you know, I think last year they made a big trade with the Hawks that on draft day. And so it's clear that David Griffin has no qualms about moving in the draft. So I think that, you know, whether they have to get that guy, who knows? But I think that if there's a, you know, if their guy is Devin Vassell and they need to go up to 9 to get him, they make that trade. You have to be willing to do that because you already have guys like Didi sitting over in Sydney? I want to say
just wrapped up a season for the Sydney Kings. Yep.
Right. It's like you have guys like that who you feel like have a chance to come in and contribute. It's like you're not just adding more names to that pile. You need to be confident in those names. And I've kind of been rambling on here, but I think that's really important that the Pelicans continue to be aggressive in their strategy to add players the way they have been so far.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at their picks in this year's draft, I mean, not only do they have 13 in the first round, they've got 39 in the second round, they've got 42, and they've got 60. So they're going into this thing with 3 second-rounders. You know, I would be surprised if they ended up using all of those second-round picks. I would guess that they do you know, some wheeling and dealing with that. If you just look at, you know, they have basically 10 guys, if you include Brandon Ingram, who's a restricted free agent, and Darius Miller, who they have an option on, who are under contract for next season. Yeah, I mean, I just have a hard time seeing them, you know, take three players in the second round or whatever.
Is there any universe where they don't end up with Trey Jones?
add to the Dukies on the roster?
I feel like they have 3 second round picks. If they have to package all three to go up two spots to get Trey Jones, I feel like they're going to get Trey Jones. It would just be so out of character for them not to end up with this guy. And he fits what they do. He's kind of like a Drew Holiday clone. I don't know. I think it's going to happen. If I had to make one mock pick for three picks, it would be him.
That's, you know, I think that's a decent bet, actually. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be pretty interesting. I mean, if you just look at the top of this draft, the Minnesota Timberwolves got the number one overall pick. That, of course, spawned a bunch of conspiracy theories. Oh, did the NBA give the Timberwolves the number one pick because they're waiting for a sale to go through and this would help grease a sale?
I hope so.
I love NBA draft lottery conspiracy theories. I mean, they're like probably my favorite conspiracy theories on Earth. You know, the frozen envelope with the Knicks and everything. It's just good stuff. I mean, it's, you know, especially with Stern, it was very believable. With Adam Silver, I'm less inclined to believe it.
Here's the thing. If there was a conspiracy theory in the NBA, it would not be to benefit small market teams. Like, if the Knicks had gotten the number one pick and you wanted to say, oh, the NBA really wants the Knicks to be successful because they make the league a ton of money, then I would be like, okay, it still doesn't make sense, but I at least like plausibly understand why you would think that might be the case. The Knicks have gotten screwed 2 years in a row. The Warriors kind of got screwed this year. So I just don't see it, man. It's just funny because, God, it must be brutal to be a Knicks fan.
Yeah, imagine having to root for the Knicks. I mean, it has to be horrible. You know, and God help, you know, whatever rookie they bring in who's going to have to play 43 minutes a night under Tibbs. The Warriors did not get screwed in this draft. They ended up with the number two pick. To me, my early instinct is they either take James Wiseman. They just have so much money tied up in the point guard position and on the wings. They don't really have a center. Or they use that asset to trade. Those are the two options that seem kind of logical to me at this point. The Hornets got the third pick. I'm hoping they take LaMelo Ball, mainly because I want LaVar Ball's son to play for the same franchise as Michael Jordan. And hopefully we finally get that, you know, one-on-one game between LaVar Ball and Michael Jordan. Who you got in that one, by the way, Jeff?
LaVar Ball and Michael Jordan?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, LaVar
Ball
else.
Versus the GOAT.
Whoever makes the money off the broadcast, that's who I have in that. So the Hornets are funny because the Hornets haven't picked in the top three or higher since 2012. And if you remember 2012, that was the year that they were the top odds to get the number one pick, and the Pelicans jumped them. And the Pelicans ended up taking Anthony Davis, and the Hornets ended up taking Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who at the time seemed like a slam dunk pick until it came out that he literally couldn't throw the ball into the ocean from the free throw line.
Well, here's how much I know about drafting. I was telling my friend, I was swearing to them, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is the next Scottie Pippen, you guys, but continue.
Well, I mean, at the time he was coming off the title, and that goes into my next point too, NCAA tournament title. And the guys, but it's made even worse by the fact that the players they passed on in that draft, next pick, Bradley Beal, number six, Damian Lillard. Guy we spent the first 10 minutes of this episode just heaping praise on. They could have had him. They got Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. The only thing worse is the Cavs taking Deion Waiters at number four. That was a brutal draft it's the complete opposite of this draft where you see the stars and it's just a matter of if you get the right one. And and there were several teams that didn't. They picked Thomas Robinson by accident and didn't realize that he just didn't have it. But, you know, it's funny because part of the reason that Michael Kilgilchrist seemed like a slam dunk was because he was so dominant in college next to Anthony Davis. And they went, ran through the final or the NCAA tournament. They didn't really get pushed. And, you know, that kind of like honeymoon effect heading into the draft has a big impact on where people go. I mentioned Carson Edwards, like, you know, people wanted him to go in the first round because of what he did in the tournament. And this year's draft is so weird because you just don't have that. The Pelicans have 3 second-round picks, and that's the position where you might be able to pick up a guy who, you know, a guy who just showed up at the NCAA tournament and, you know, got fawned over by, I can't think of an announcer, Clark Kellogg. We'll go with Clark Kellogg. And all of a sudden, he's a fringe, you know, late first-rounder because of that. That's not going to happen this year. You're going to have to do all of your development based on tape. It's going to be interesting to see, especially in the later picks, how that plays out. I wonder if there's going to be a lot more international players taken than normal, because there's going to be a lot more tape on those guys.
No, I think you bring up a really interesting point. I mean, it's just very, very difficult to get to see prospects in person compared to previous years. I saw Arturis Karnisovas, who is running, you know, the basketball side with the Chicago Bulls now. He was the Nuggets' number two for a couple of years. He said tonight that one of his rules in scouting is he always likes to see a guy he's drafting at least twice in person. A lot of these, you know, guys just aren't going to get that opportunity. It'll be really interesting. Real quick, I want to read you this list of 13th overall pick in the past 10 years. This is my favorite dumb game to do on draft night. Like, especially, you know, the team I'm covering lands somewhere in the late lottery. I love to just look up like these lists and be like, there is a chance you can get a guy who could be an absolute game changer. So here we go. 13th overall picks in the past 10 years. Tyler Hero, Jerome Robinson, Donovan Mitchell. Ever heard of him?
I think so.
Okay, yeah. And then Papa Giannis with the Kings. You've probably heard of him, but for not such great reasons. I remember.
Kings?
Yeah, the Kings took Papa Giannis. That's just his last name.
I thought it was like a joke for Giannis Antetokounmpo went in that range. So I thought maybe it was a joke.
No.
I don't even know who Papa Giannis is.
Exactly.
Continue.
Devin Booker, Zach LaVine, Kelly Olynyk, Kendall Marshall, the UNC legend, Markieff Morris, him and his brother went one pick apart. I would love to know.
Of course they did.
Like, what? I want an oral history of how did we decide this Morris brother was better than the other one? I would read.
Well,
like,
if you were gonna take that one, it's like we'll take either one; they're the same. So if you went one pick before, you're like, okay, we'll just take the other one.
Yeah, one of my favorite NBA stories is when they were both in Phoenix. They lived together and shared a bank account.
And they have identical tattoos, too.
And unfortunately, it doesn't look like the Ball brothers are going to get that chance. I think LaMelo will be off the board long before the Pelicans pick at 13. And then my last one was Ed Davis. So it's a pretty interesting mix there. I mean,
there are at least like 4 star players on that list. I remember Devin. You said Devin Booker. I mean, there's a couple that you think are going to be pretty good and you just don't know. Yeah, I think Hero is going to be an excellent player.
Yeah, so recent history would suggest that you can get a helpful player there. I mean, you know, I don't think, like, you know, guys develop. It takes guys, you know, longer to develop sometimes. And, you know, just because you get a talented player there, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, he's going to produce for you on his rookie contract. I mean, oftentimes it takes guys, you know, until their second contracts to be, you know, really plus NBA players. So I don't think that means that much. But yeah, I mean, I think the Pelicans are in a decent spot here. You know, like we said earlier, you know, with all the assets they've got, you know, not only this year, but in years to come, there's a chance they could do some wheeling and dealing.
I will say like what I said before goes both ways, right? Because it's not always the case that someone who shows up in the NCAA tournament and people just become aware of them is a bad player. I mean, that's Stephen Curry. Like you could end up with Stephen Curry or you could end up with, you know, Thomas Robinson, like I said before, you know. So what if a guy like Marcus Howard, for instance, is a much better player than people realize until you see him on that national stage, and he's just pouring in buckets. Like, I think he would have been in this NCAA tournament the Carson Edwards of last year. He's the Marquette guard. He just shoots the lights out. A guy like Nick Richards for Kentucky, who this mock draft has him going 53rd overall, a 6'11 center. He, you know, probably would have been in the Sweet 16 getting a chance to show off, but he's not going to. So I think there's a chance where, especially, you know, in the middle of the first round, if your scouting is there and you're doing your due diligence and you're able to ID these guys, you have a chance to pick up a guy like a Devin Booker in that spot.
The darling of Pelicans Twitter right now is Alexei Pulkasevsky.
Pulkasevsky. I think.
Oh, he's Serbian. Yeah, he's Serbian.
Okay. That makes more sense.
7 foot center, skinny as a rail. My only take on that right now is that he would look absolutely hilarious next to Zion. He's listed at 200 pounds and he's over 7 feet tall. You know, I've seen the meme going around that Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson look like the Apple Jacks logo. If they paired Zion and Poku, they really would have the Apple Jacks logo thing going on. That's my only take on him right now.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. It's like, for me personally, the NCAA tournament is when I get to see a lot of these guys, you know, because I'm not going to be able to take the time to look at all of these players, especially, you know, the international guys notwithstanding, but you know, that's just when you get to see these players on a national stage, especially in the first round where everyone's playing. And you're just not going to get that. So it's like there's a lot of guys that I think are good that I probably haven't taken enough time to actually know that for sure. One of the few guys that I have taken the time on is Obi Toppin. I'm a very big fan of that kid. But he's another guy that, you know, Dayton doesn't play a lot of national games. It's very limited time you get to see him play. And you know, maybe he'd be the number one pick if he got a chance to show off on a national stage. Maybe that would have been an overreaction. Or maybe he would have hurt his stock. Maybe he would have been Glenn Davis year two. People learned too much about him and he fell down. And you just don't get that. So, yeah, I mean, the Pelicans all along, the confusing part for me was I didn't quite understand the plan right away that when they went to the bubble, those games didn't count for the seeding. So, like, if in my head, if they lost all their games, they would actually help themselves seeding or draft lottery wise. That wasn't the case. And once I figured that out, those last two games just seemed like even less than a scrimmage, because at least in the scrimmage, you're working towards something. That's just like, please don't break your leg, Jackson.
Yeah, rooting in against injuries. That was literally it the last two games. Now that we've both established that we're both underinformed generally about this draft class, I want to ask you two questions. The draft is scheduled for October 16th. We've got about 2 months for us to get to know some of these guys. But right now, you know, about 2 months out, if you were picking at 13 for the Pelicans, who would you take? And then who do you think the Pelicans would take?
And I'm not allowed to trade. I have to pick at 13.
You can't
trade.
That's
what I'm telling myself. So this is always difficult because, like I said, I'm a big Obi Toppin fan, but I can't reasonably say that he will be on the board at 13. So I can't say Obi Toppin. You know, I want them to draft a guy like James Wiseman, but he will not be on the board. That's why I think, like, if there's a guy that they want, they have to go get him. But it's so tough because you just need a wing that can make shots, in my opinion. And
I like where you're going.
The guy I look at is Precious Achiuwa, but I've watched him play too much, and he just, I don't see it. I really like Cole Anthony. I don't see them taking a guard there. I'm just trying to go through this list. I like Vernon Carey. He's probably going to be too high at that spot. But I think they need a big center, and I don't think that they're going to bring, you know, they might bring Derek Favors back, but if they bring him back, it'll probably be a mid-level, and they need that strong center or that flex wing. So if I'm drafting, I'm probably going to take a guy like Vernon Carey or trade up for James Wiseman, even though I'm not allowed to do that. If it's the Pelicans, I'd guess they take a guy like Devin Vassell. Am I saying that right? Is it Vassell? Vassell?
Second one.
Out of, where is he, Florida State. You know, he's a 6'7 shooting guard. Gives them a lot more flexibility on defense. again, I don't know enough about these guys to really make an informed opinion. The other guy, the Okongwu out of USC, is intriguing too. I've seen him a couple times.
Did you know Okongwu was a high school teammate with Lonzo Ball? He was part of that Chino Hills team that went 35-0. LaMelo Ball was on there. LiAngelo Ball was also on there. And then Eli Scott, who's at Loyola Marymount, he might get a chance to be in the NBA next year. But you did not want to run into that team in high school.
Yeah, it's a match made in Chino. But yeah, that's what I would go with. Again, under-informed opinion, I think that the interior defense this year was mind-bogglingly bad. And if you're targeting a position, I think that's the position you target, whether it's with a big wing who can make the three, or it's a center that can pound down low, which you just don't have right now.
Yeah, I mean, center is going to be really interesting position to see what they do this summer. I mean, they're going to have to address it in free agency somehow. So as far as my question goes, I like what you said about a wing who can make shots. I mean, I think the forward who's just best as a pure shooter in this draft is probably Aaron Naismith out of Vanderbilt. That guy, I mean, he can hit threes off movement. He's excellent from a standstill. He didn't play a ton of games, but I mean, just judging off, you know, like the one or two games I watched and then the highlights, like that guy can absolutely shoot the hell out of the ball, which, you know, it's a pretty simple formula around Zion on the offensive end. Like, just give him space to kill people inside. My bet on who they would take right now, this is like, you know, no reporting at all behind this. I would say Sadiq Bey. I don't know. It's just, that's a complete shot in the dark. Maybe I could see a fit there. But yeah, we've got two months to dive into this stuff. We are going to have plenty more draft stuff coming at you in the coming weeks and months. And this is just such an interesting offseason for the Pelicans. I mean, I guess, you know, first, we don't even know when next season is going to start. But, you know, I think it's a low-key interesting draft. I mean, they're going to have a lot more interesting ones in the years to come with all the assets they have. You know, really interesting free agency to see what they do at center, to see if they can get Jrue Holiday to agree to extension. And if not, you know, do you look to move him? And of course, hire a head coach. I mean, the biggest thing, right, really.
And that's the other thing that we didn't even mention. It's like, you know, as you look at this roster, who they bring in at coach and the system they're going to run is going to be vitally important to how you view these players. If you're going to bring in a guy like Kenny Atkinson and they're going to still run this kind of go system, then that you target a flexible wing who can switch on defense and get up and down the floor. You know, if you're going to bring in a guy, I don't want to throw any examples out there, but if you're going to bring a guy that's going to really shift that system, then you look at a completely different set of guys. And especially as a rookie who can come in and help you. And I assume that's what you're going to be looking for, but, there's going to be a lot. And, Adam Silver came out today and I think he said something along the lines of December 1st seems too early, or it seems, like it's pretty early to consider starting a season there. So it might even start later than we think. And when you start pushing it back even further, you start going into territory of permanent season shuffle where you're never going to have it come back to the paradigm that we were at, which, you know, maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah. I think the finals, you know, game seven of the finals, if it goes that far, is supposed to go to like October 13th or something like that. I believe, I mean, the draft is scheduled for October 16th. Like, I'm assuming the Pelicans will have a head coach hired by then, but, I don't know. I mean, I'm not 100% sure. I mean, Griff said during that availability that they want to be able to sit down with some of these candidates in person. I mean, you know, say there's a candidate whose team makes it to the NBA Finals. I mean, the timing on that could be tricky. I mean, I would imagine they do, but it's going to be really interesting. The timelines are so weird right now. Jeff, I want you this week to just go practice those 35-footers like we talked about.
I have been.
Oh, you have been. Okay.
They don't go in.
They don't when I try them either.
I've gotten like to be like a 90% miss on that shot, which I feel like isn't that bad.
Yeah, I think I saw in that Kirk Goldsberry article that Dame makes 80% of them in practice. You know, obviously not in the game, but when he's unguarded, he makes like 70-80% of those 35-footers. I'm going to say that's pretty good.
Yeah. My favorite part of watching NBA games, or actually, it's actually my favorite part of watching college games, is whenever they take, like Carson Edwards used to take deep threes. He was the Dame Lillard of college last year. And the announcers would just freak out. Like, I can't believe he's shooting it from that far away. It was like, that's an NBA three. If he can't make it out there, he's not gonna make it to the NBA. And it's like, once you get to the NBA, it just gets like 5 feet farther out. And it's like, yeah, okay. It's a better shot. This is the argument I make, is he's gonna shoot a better percentage on an unguarded 35-footer than he's gonna shoot on a contested, 27-footer or whatever the distance is at the break. So why not? Why not shoot an unguarded shot? And then if they decide to guard you, then you have everything else. Anyway, we just kind of did like a full loop, but it's a good loop.
The lesson from this week, shooters shoot even if it's from 40 feet away. Thank you guys for listening this week. We will be talking to you soon next week.
Yes, sir.